Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 11, where we try to find a little kid's mummy.
A little kid's mummy?
A little kid's mummy.
Are you my mummy?
I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Glenn.
Welcome to this week's episode.
Yes.
We almost did that in tandem.
Almost.
Jinx, you owe me a Coke.
All right. Does that mean I have to shut up now?
No.
Okay, good.
Just owe me a Coke.
Okay. How was your guys' week?
Very good. Very good. Good. Week.
Yeah. Except for the weather, which is not being very nice right here.
Yeah, off
Midwest.
And on, off and on, winter, summer, spring, winter, spring.
70 degrees yesterday, snow tonight,
yeah.
Ice.
Yeah.
Not very pleasant.
No.
But we are still here recording for you despite the weather.
That's right. We braved the weather, crossed the big city of Topeka, Kansas. And
some of us crossed the state to
yeah.
be here.
Yeah. Sean actually went to Wichita to watch a movie.
Yeah.
Now, if you're wondering, why would he go to Wichita to watch a movie? A, Topeka movie theaters, they stink. Well, not stink like no stink, but they just really stink.
They're better now than they used to be.
They are.
True.
And B, Wichita is a really, really cool theater.
The Warren.
Mm.
I got goosebumps just talking about it. We're going to change topics. It's the Mecca for movie lovers, and it's my Mecca, so that's where I go, and I pray at the altar. I saw Battle for L.A., just in case anybody's wondering, and I recommend it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Let's
I
get
it
your
good.
Brief 20-second review.
It's like Independence Day meets District 9. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. It's got a couple plot holes toward the end, but I didn't go for plot. I went to see things blow up, and they did.
19,
I heard it described
20.
As yeah, Independence
seconds.
Day meets Black Hawk Down.
That would also work.
Oh. Now that's intriguing.
It's very military-based. It's very...
But the District 9 element didn't include it?
You know. District 9 had too heavy of a message, heavy-handed of a message.
Yeah, no, there's no message
and
in this
switched
at all.
Tone halfway through the movie. That's what I didn't like about it.
It's very...
I mean, it's a good movie, don't get me wrong.
Oh,
but
Yo-Joe. That's kind of a good one. It's not like G.I. Joe's, like, ridiculous.
Right.
It's just that camaraderie, that military. Yeah. And if you like that kind of stuff, you'll really get into it, which
America
I do.
Rocks.
Well, not in this one, not so much. But they're not down on everything, which was kind of a pleasant surprise.
Okay.
So.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'll elevate it from DVD release or Blu-ray release to...
Cheap theater.
Maybe cheap theater, yeah. I'm not going to drive to Wichita go to
No, you don't have to drive to Wichita.
Even bigger news than that. What gave me goosebumps this week was the announcement. I think Entertainment Weekly actually scooped this story on everybody. BBC America's announcement of Series 6 will launch in the USA on the 23rd of April.
And that's the same day it launches in the
same
UK.
Same day it launches in the UK. Did that finally get confirmed? Because
I
know
sure
when the news first came out, there still wasn't a launch date for the BBC in the UK.
Maybe I missaw, but I could have sworn that's what
yeah,
I saw.
Now, I'd heard people talking this week or seen some tweets that that actually is, in fact, the day for them. So that'll be nice to have this transmission going out, you know, less than, what is it? Less than 12 hours later.
You know what I was excited about? I scooped you.
You did, yeah. Sean actually called my attention to this week. So usually I'm on top of the new news, and Sean got the scoop on this week. So what do you guys think? I mean,
I'm excited. I was so giddy that day
I think
we found out.
When I kept hearing April's the target date, you know, because it usually comes out around Easter, and I'm not even sure what
that's Easter weekend.
Okay, so that makes sense. We probably, if those putting money on Easter weekend, probably just won. So,
ding!
I was excited. I kept hearing April as a target date, and I kept thinking in the back of my head, oh, yeah, it's probably going to be late April.
Which
but I was still hopeful
still
in
is,
the front of my mind that it would be earlier than that. But no, April's great. April 23rd. I marked that on my calendar.
We're
already.
Almost a month away. So
yeah, and just a few weeks from being a month away. Yeah.
I think we're about 6 weeks. Something like that.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, see, I was the opposite. When we watched Christmas Carol and they said new series starting, you know, 2011. January 1st is here. Where is my doctor? And it wasn't on.
You even said that. You were like, you even had these like, almost like hopeful moments that, well, you know, it's 2011, so that really could be like February or March. And I was like, no, Sean, I don't think they would push it up that far, especially since they're dividing the season this year and going on hiatus over the summer, so it just didn't seem plausible to move it up to February and make us wait 6 months in between, but yeah, who knows?
Yeah. I was hopeful.
You were.
Not everybody's pleased with the date. Our friend Sarah is very, very upset.
Why is Sarah upset with the date?
It's too far away.
Oh, well.
Yeah. She has to wait until,
April 23rd.
And I told her, I was like, the good news, though, I mean, realistically, we could sit down and watch the Daleks, and the new series would be on by the time we were done. So.
There also is a new poster out that I think is pretty cool with a new tagline for the season, it looks like, or the series, Trust Your Doctor.
Well, at least on BBC America, because that's what the poster's for. Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern for us. That's 8 p.m. Central. We're in the Central time zone.
So. And it looks like he's standing in the desert with his sonic screwdriver glowing with his back to the screen.
Standing on a road.
I made it my desktop.
I think it's been confirmed that the first couple episodes are the Utah episodes. Yes. So that'll be exciting.
And then the third is the one done by Neil Gaiman, right?
That sounds right. Yeah, that sounds right.
Was that one of the ones that was up for contention for being changed?
I
know there were a couple of them that flipped the order around, but I don't remember if... I think there's a part of me that wants to say the Neil Gaiman one got pushed to the second half. But I could be wrong.
Hmm.
I hope not, because I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah. Oh, we'll have to verify that and see.
If anybody knows, feedback.
TravelingTheVortex@gmail.com. Yeah.
.com.
I thought you meant you wanted to split it up three ways. TravelingTheVortex@gmail.com. No, see, we made it four ways. You messed up, Sean. Whatever.
It should be traveling anyways.
It's because I don't know where our emails are at.
Yeah, Sean. Okay, we're gonna let we know. There's no secret that Sean is our technical Neanderthal. Now, that's his self-named. I'm not calling him a technical Neanderthal.
They're so mean to me.
But he has called, he's labeled himself as the technical
Neanderthal. You've heard it here.
Yeah, I'm pretty bad.
We've been, this is our 11th episode. We've been up for at least 2 months, almost 2.5 months. And this week was the first week that Sean's ever logged into our Gmail account.
And he actually saw an email before you and I.
Yes, he
saw
did.
A feedback
yes, that's
email.
Absolutely right. He did. He saw one before us. So
I'm scooping all over the place. This week.
But we do keep. In his defense, we do keep him up to date. Keith and I try to relay to him ahead of episodes what we're talking about, what
instead
kind
of
feedback we've
instead
got.
Instead of emailing the password, I just emailed him the emails we got.
That's right.
So he could read them.
We just forward ahead. Those are emails. Well, speaking of feedback this week, we've got a few here. I'm going to read out this first one. It's a little lengthy, so bear with us. But this is from our friend of the show, Chrissy Jones.
Hey, Chrissy!
She's got the wonderful CJ's Notebook 5 on blogspot.com. She's a blogger, and she's also a Doctor Who fan. Say that 10 times fast. Anyway, she says,
wasn't that
hi, guys.
Peter Sellers movie? Fu Manchu.
Hi, guys. I was listening to your commentary for the latest episode dealing with the Dalek stories from the Hartnell era, and I have a few things to say that hopefully add to the conversation. After I finished watching the new series of Doctor Who, I started watching Classic Who with the grand design to watch everything from the very beginning. But I got bogged down around the time Vicky left for one simple reason. In the Hartnell years, you don't watch for the Doctor, you watch for the companions. Personally, I never got a real connection to the First Doctor. He always felt like a secondary character to me. I was always more interested in what the companions were doing. Ian and Barbara were my favorites. I loved the Romans and Planet of Giants. And I was a little bummed out when they left. Vicky was a great companion as well. Then she left and I sort of lost my enthusiasm for the Hartnell stories. I kind of feel like a bad Doctor Who fan for feeling that way, but there you go. That's when I started skipping around the classic series and sampling different eras to find ones I liked. I watched Castrovalva. That's not the one that I have problems with.
Yeah,
I watched Castrovalva for the first time and ended up blazing through all of the Fifth Doctor's episodes. Thanks for putting on such a great show every week. I can't wait to hear what Keith has to say about The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances. Those are my favorite Ninth Doctor episodes, too. Chrissy, P.S. I have only one complaint, and it isn't even really a big one, I hope. Every time you bring up the Mirka, I have to shake my head because the only Peter Davison story Keith has seen is Warriors of the Deep. As someone whose favorite so far, Classic Doctor, is the Fifth Doctor and a faithful listener, I humbly request that you fix this as soon as feasible. Keith needs more five in his life.
Chrissy, we will do what we can about getting me some more five because I don't want the Mirka to be a stigma for the Fifth Doctor. I mean, surely only things can go up.
The Mirka is a stigma for the Fifth Doctor, for the series in general, for science fiction, for creature design.
For British television.
For British television.
I'll tell you, I realized this after I read this feedback from Chrissy. I realized that we're doing Keith a disservice in so many ways. Because, number one, we introduce him for the first time to the Fifth Doctor, and it's the Mirka story, Warriors of the Deep, which we all said was a pretty decent story. It's just got some really poor elements. And then when we introduce him to the First Doctor, we introduce him to one of the longest story arcs, drawn-out story arcs ever. So we're like blemishing the Doctors every time we introduce a new Doctor to him. Now, fortunately, you've been a fan of Pertwee so far.
I have been, but I also think of it this way. After watching Daleks, I enjoyed Invasion of Daleks more. Daleks Invasion of Earth, whatever. I enjoyed that one more, and that was the First Doctor. So I'm thinking, if we get kind of these worse episodes or the tougher episodes to get through out of the way first,
that's a good way.
I'll enjoy the rest of them.
That's a good way.
Instead of ending on a sour note.
So there you go, Chrissy. We're just getting the less than favorable episodes out of the way.
Because once we get to the really good episodes, we'll probably wind up doing like an entire podcast.
And I feel like maybe we've been a bit too harsh on the Mirka in some regard.
He
is our mascot. You have to understand this all comes out of a place of love. Tough love at times, but love nonetheless.
That's
so
true.
And I totally agree with your comments about Ian and Barbara. They were spot on.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, and then of course I mentioned one week reading the post from somebody that was reviewing the First Doctor's era, and they said that really in the first series or the first season, at the very least, it should have been called Ian because the Doctor is really a secondary character to him. I mean,
he's
the one that is kind of the glue of the series because it's his TARDIS, it's his adventures. He does know more than them in the sense of science and travel and things like that. But, I mean, your swashbuckling hero is Ian, and Barbara even to a point at some point, you know, in the second series is even, you know, more of a front runner to the heroism, you know, than the Doctor is. So,
absolutely.
Well, going on to feedback, this is from Alex Giles. Alex sent in, thought I'd send in some feedback as I only listen to 6 Doctor Who podcasts regularly out of the hundreds, it seems, that are out there. I do listen to others now and again, but these 6 I will listen to the minute I see a new one. I really like Traveling the Vortex, which I started listening to around episode 7. I have listened to all the old ones, though. What I like most about your show is the vibe and flow of it. It's a good, fun podcast to listen to, and it seems to make sense. I assume that's what he meant. He's a question mark.
No, I think he's trying to say it's a fun podcast to listen to and seems to make.
It is fun to make, yeah, it, I think. Except for the horrible time I have because they make fun of me every episode. But that's okay.
Back to the email.
In case you're wondering what the other podcasts I listen to, they are the Journal of Improbable Things podcast, the Oodcast, Radio Rassilon, Radio Free Scaro, Dirty Hooers, and you guys. Thanks to you guys, I can no longer watch the movie without thinking of Ninja Turtles and expecting to see a sewer drain with Raphael's head peeking out. Always keep up the good work and look forward to keep listening. Alex. And this is Moldwitch on Twitter, so you can look up Alex there.
We've given Moldwitch a few shout-outs in the past and have recognized him, but now we've got a name.
Name
to the screen.
Alex is my friend on Facebook.
Alex is your friend on Facebook?
Yes.
Well, congratulations.
I don't know if I was just the easiest one to find or not.
Perhaps.
Maybe he's your favorite?
So,
you're his favorite?
Maybe. Swell my head, why don't you? Alex, thank you so much for the feedback.
I got to swell your head so we can bring it down.
It makes it a much easier target.
That's true.
Oh, but thanks, Alex. That's a very nice email. It's always great to hear those kind words.
We've got to set this next one up because this is Mark, right?
This is Mark.
Our next one, and
we got an email from him last week saying that he was our number one fan, and yep. I was telling Sean about this, and just telling, kind of trying to give him the gist of what the email said, because I didn't have it memorized or anything.
And of course, I don't log into the...
And he exaggerated it a little bit in his head, and was like, this guy sounds creepy.
So really, it's Keith's poor description of your last email, Mark, is the reason why
read what he said.
Okay, and then he says... Hello again, thanks for the shout-ups. Sorry if I seemed a bit creepy with my message. Also, bowtie t-shirts. Smiley face emoticons.
Smiley face emoticon.
Mark, I don't think you're creepy, just for the record.
I think it's awesome
you creepy,
that you're
but I don't anymore,
our number one fan.
Yeah, no lie.
Yeah, we love that.
That's we great. Have a number one fan. How cool
but
is
now,
that?
Well, wait a minute.
This next email.
Wait a minute. Now, we asked if there was anyone that wanted to contend that last week, and following on the heels of Mark's letter, we got a letter from Alex Smith. Alex says, Dear Glenn, Sean, and Keith, and he spells Sean S-E-A-N, but he got it right the first time.
He did get it right the first time.
But I think it's a jab because we were talking about how Sean, it was spelled correctly, S-E-A-N, so that's the British version.
Only across the pond.
Anyway, Alex reads, Hi there. Recently, you read out some feedback from a writer named Mark Lee, who wrote for Doctor Who Reincarnated. I'm a friend of Mark's and co-writer for Reincarnated, as it happens. And after he sent you feedback, he recommended your podcast to me as something I should check out. I did so, and I have to say I'm glad I did. It's one of the best podcasts I've listened to, and certainly one of the most interesting. My head's swelling now.
I know.
This is fantastic. The Ode to the Mirka was, in particular, inspiring, Sean.
I think there you so. Go.
I did, however, notice that you made a mistake in episode 10. You claimed that Mark was your number one fan. I'm afraid this is incorrect, as I am, in fact, your number one fan. You're probably wondering how this error could have occurred, but don't worry. Mark and I are, in fact, different aspects of the same persona. He comes from a point between my 12th and 13th regeneration, and it's commonly known as the Failyard.
Keith will explain that one later.
Okay. So it's easy. It's an easy mistake to make. But yeah, seriously, you guys are great. Consider yourself one avid listener and one number one fan, Richard, Alex Smith. P.S. Took me about an hour to get this message sent. Why, you ask? I was spelling traveling with two L's. Facepalm. That's in... Now, I'll give you... I'll tell you when I was setting this podcast up and I was registering sites and everything like that frequently, and I almost registered one as traveling with two L's. So, Alex, you're not alone. I did the same thing. I kept putting two L's. I don't know why I think traveling should have two L's, but...
I'm going to blame the member that chose the name.
who did that? It was Keith.
It was Keith.
I didn't come up with that.
It was Keith. He came up with traveling
the vortex. He totally came up with traveling the vortex. I don't remember anymore. It's been too long.
But... Thank you, Alex. That was another great email. And
a lot of fun, Alex.
I don't think we said he was our number one fan. Mark said that he was our number one fan.
We read it out. So.
The gauntlet has been thrown down now. Mark,
so, yeah, now,
rebut?
It sounds like, we can have Mark's rebuttal, if he so pleases. If he is our number one fan, we'll hear from him. But there might still be others out there that are contending for number one fan. So if that is the case, be sure to send us feedback to Traveling the Vortox.
That's what two L's, everyone.
Traveling the Botox. travelingthevortex@gmail.com. You can also reach us on our Blogspot page, Keith.
travelingthevortex.blogspot.com.
Or you can call our
Boy, we all rented our lips tonight.
I got to get mine back.
We haven't been drinking tonight.
They're turning into a pumpkin. Or you can call our Google voicemail number, 913-809-3025. It's also travelingthevortex@gmail.com. I don't know if we said that one or
did
not.
Did I say .com? Yeah, I said that was the first one, I think.
Okay.
We're also on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, Facebook.
Facebook.com/travelingthevortex.
And Twitter.
Twitter.com/travelvortex.
Yep. We can't use traveling the vortex there, so there was no mistake of me putting two L's in that one. But,
I love feedback.
I think
the feedback may be my favorite part of the show, quite honestly. I really get up for...
Oh, yeah. Well, it's great to hear that there are people out there that are sharing our conversations with us, that are listening in, that are interested in what we're having to say. I mean, realistically, we got together
to do this podcast, not because we wanted to necessarily share with listeners and try to find as many listeners as we could and be popular and whatnot. We wanted to do this podcast so that we could sit down and just talk Doctor Who every week. And so it's really nice that there are people out there that want in on that conversation and they want to listen. And it really creates a network of people, and I'm really enjoying it.
We were going to do it anyways. Why not do it around the microphone?
Absolutely. We might as well record it. We're going to talk about it. Stick a microphone in it.
When we started, I never thought we'd get 4 emails in a day.
Absolutely.
For one episode. Just getting the one a few weeks back in the voicemail blew my mind.
We were giddy when we got the first one.
Oh, yeah. I never expected to get any feedback. Yeah, so it's great. Thank you guys so much.
If we tally them up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, we're at 10 listeners.
how many downloads are we at,
amazing. Yeah, that was the other thing. We've been tracking our downloads recently. Well, just over the last, I can say right off the top of my head, over the last 30 days, there's been 540 downloads of our show. So that's getting out. Now, some of those are, you know, people coming in late, picking up and going back and getting, you know, previous episodes, but overall on an average in 30 days.
Admittedly, 10 of those are me because I finally got my phone to cooperate with an RSS feed that included the podcast and it went and downloaded everything.
Did you get it working?
I think so. They're on there.
Well, then they're there.
What's interesting is the application that my phone is using, apparently our podcast is so awesome, it wants to play it all the time because it'll start every 10 minutes and I can't figure out how to shut the damn thing off. It just starts and we talk.
It says you haven't heard this yet, but you have because you were here.
Well, I was here for it, but I haven't gone back and listened to it yet, so I will. And then as soon as I get those done, I plan on actually branching out and trying to sample some of these other podcasts. I feel really bad that we're getting feedback from other podcasters who recognize what we're doing and like it. And I kind of feel like the hypocrite we're awesome. I don't listen to you.
I want to apologize because I've given, you know, I've kind of steered you the direction of some that I listen to. And I'm not going to read out who are my favorites. I don't think that's fair. But you've come late to the podcasting game, even listening-wise. You've come late, too. And you don't have a lot of time because... Well, Keith and I don't have a lot of time either, but you've got school and work, and, you know, so you've got everything on top of everything. And I can see it's really hard to schedule time in there for you. So you'll have to forgive Sean because he is late to the game. And this summer, he will catch up on everybody's Doctor Who podcast, I promise.
Thank you, Glenn.
And I want to put out an apology because I want to listen to a lot of these podcasts.
Yeah,
but
you're in a different situation.
I'm trying my damnedest to... Pardon my French. I'm trying to avoid spoilers as much as I can, so that's why I'm not listening to any podcasts and sending any feedback. And I'm hoping that it still might be kind of iffy, but once Series 6 starts, I might be able to listen to some of the podcasts with the new episodes.
I think
hopefully
will.
They'll focus on just those.
I think you'll find that, and I probably should, because I really do listen to a lot of podcasts, and I probably should be a filter for you and say, okay, this one's going to be safe, this one's not going to be safe, this one, you know.
No, yeah, that'd be great.
I don't think you're going to get spoiled too much if they're talking classic Who. I don't think you're going to get spoiled too much if they're talking brand new Who. Where you're going to get spoiled is in where we're at now in the new series that you haven't seen, because I think that the real spoilers are there. There's so much classic Who that even if you heard something, it's not going to take away anything from your viewing when you go back and actually pick it up. In fact, Sean and I talk a lot more about classic Who and fill you in on things.
But we
try to stay away from Eccleston and Tennant now because, you know, those are the ones that are going to be fresh in your mind and probably will spoil something from you, especially since there's large... themes arcing each season, so we're really careful.
And isn't it rough when he starts talking about, I really wanted to know more about this, and we start getting giddy, but we can't
biting
say
our
anything.
Tongues. Okay.
Now you know how I
just
am
wait.
When you guys are talking
doing
about
Lost.
Yeah.
Well, because we went through that with you. I first watched Lost after, you know, years after it had been off. Well, a year after it had been off.
You
had watched it for 6 years, so followed along.
Just real quick, you know what else I think is really cool is we have these people who do listen to all these different podcasts and are jumping on the bandwagon with us saying, we really like what you're doing, which, you know, obviously, again, thank you. We just think that's so cool. But it's amazing to me that Because I don't know, are we talking about different things? Is it because of the Midwest perspective? Is it because we've got the newbie that is maybe some different things are coming up as opposed to what all of these other podcasts? Because surely there's some repeat stuff out there that everybody's talked about, RegenGate or whatever it happens to be. And I think that's really cool that maybe not necessarily that we found the new fresh slant, but we're just doing it in apparently an entertaining way that people enjoy.
And hopefully those listeners will stick around.
Well, four more episodes that we don't have to worry about spoiling Keith on now. We're going to talk about this week. We're continuing our talk about series one of the new series with Chris Eccleston.
The Ninth Doctor.
And this week we start off with...
The Long Game. In the far future, Satellite 5 broadcasts to the entire Earth Empire. Nothing escapes the eye of the sinister editor, and the Doctor suspects mankind is being manipulated. But just who is the editor working for? And why does Adam have what it takes to be the Time Lord's And does Adam have what it takes to become the Time Lord's companion?
Question mark?
No.
Dude, spoiler alert.
I knew it from the beginning that he wasn't going to... No.
I thought it was really cool.
It would have been a boring episode.
We end Dalek and you were surprised. Oh, my God, who's this kid? And Adam tags along with the crew. And it was kind of all right, cool. We got this multiple companion dynamic going on now. And it sure didn't last long, did it?
No, it sure didn't. No.
It really didn't.
I don't like going that direction with it because it opened the door for another companion that was much better that we'll talk about in a little bit.
Oh, yes.
I thought this was a great episode. I really enjoyed watching it. Had the great Simon Pegg in it.
The great Simon Pegg.
The great Simon Pegg. I've thoroughly enjoyed him in everything I've seen him in. Some stuff more than others, but I've always enjoyed his work, and this was kind of refreshing to see him in a bit more serious of a role. Because he walked the line in the new Star Trek movie of being serious and funny.
Well, he was the comic relief.
He was the comic relief, but he still had some serious.
It's a serious role, but it's light comedy for that serious role. Yeah.
So he tweeted recently too that he's apparently heard that the new Star Trek movie script is gangbusters.
Oh, good.
It's supposed to be just phenomenal. He's drooling. He hasn't actually read it yet, but he's heard from other people, and I'm drooling now, so. We love you, Simon Pegg.
But I thought he was great in it. I thought the Doctor's interactions with Adam was very entertaining to watch, really especially near the end of the episode. the Doctor was a bit funnier in this one, I thought, than he had been before.
Well, we just came off of Dalek, which is such a heavy episode as far as the Doctor's concerned. There's very little room for humor there, and this was a chance for the Doctor to get light again with the Doctor and kind of bring us up out of that. Even though there's still serious peril and the situation's dire and the Doctor has to fix it, it was able to give him a chance to kind of come out of that dark funk we had for a while.
Mm-hmm. I liked almost everything about the episode. It did kind of fall flat on its face for me at the end. With the whole reveal of this big monster and why it's there and what it's doing, and just kind of like
the Jagger Feth.
Yeah, that's what I was getting.
I call it Max.
The mighty Jagger Feth.
Say it again.
It was the mighty Jagger Feth.
Not great. Mighty Jagger Feth.
It's the mighty Jagger Feth of holy Adrogastic Maxer. Oh my gosh.
I can't believe you even attempted that.
Maxura de Four. I'm sure that...
call it Max.
It is Max, yeah.
That was a great line. Yeah, he did have... Absolutely. Simon Pegg did have some great lines.
That's another thing is... It was tailored for Simon Pegg because, number one, he is such a... he's such a huge science fiction fan. I think I've heard him say he's a Doctor Who fan.
He
really wanted to be in this series.
Have you ever seen this little thing he did called Space?
Well, absolutely, So
I don't think he's a fan at all.
Star Wars, it was everything. Tailored for him because even though it was a bad guy, he still was able to get campy and a little, not even, it wasn't over the top, but it was over the top without going over the top, And so really worked for it.
I mean, he's a bad guy, but he's not a bad guy at the same time because he's just doing a job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, at the end, he's like, of course... Part of being a bad guy is looking out for yourself only, especially in most situations. So him at the end, I'd like to tender my resignation.
the editor. I call him the controller. He was the editor.
The editor. And then as soon as Adam went to try to look into the computer stuff and really just try to access the computer, I was like, oh, he's not going to stick around. I was a little surprised that they put him back in their normal time, in his normal time, instead of just leaving him there.
Yeah.
Which the ending was fantastic, where his mom comes in, snaps her fingers, and then freaks out.
Yeah.
That was a great way to end the episode.
I like that.
When he snuck off, didn't you feel just a little bit like yelling at the screen, "You're stealing the fizzy lifting drinks! You're bumping into the ceiling! Don't do that, man! You're going to get kicked off the tour!" And he did it anyway. Yeah. And
it almost seems that the doctor, maybe it's just me thinking this, but the doctor almost would have let it slide if it was just one of the chips where he can access it. But since it was the hole in his head, that was kind of a little bit too far.
Yeah.
Like just having the chip in his arm,
just
or whatever,
having the information was, yeah,
would have been enough, okay. Yeah. But
it was just, we went a little too far.
Yeah.
He pushed it a little too far, and the doctor essentially punished him for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Destroyed the information he tried to send back, and
that's right.
Yeah,
Sean, what'd you think?
Honestly, this one for me, I think is a weak episode. I think it's a weaker Doctor Who episode in general. It's got moments that are great, but just the general plot with this thing that's interfering with the growth of humanity through television, which I enjoy television as much as the next person, but I kind of err more on the side of Star Trek, where I kind of hope that medium has disappeared by the time the future rolls around, because there's so much of it, especially here in the States, that is not so good. Yeah. I'm tired of reality TV in particular, and we'll get to that one later.
Yeah.
Well, actually, here soon.
Which
but
very soon. Remember that episode from previous viewings of Doctor Who a little bit.
We even talked about that long ago.
But Simon Pegg really is the high watermark for me. Mm-hmm. Just the fact that he's in this. Hey, look, it's Simon Pegg. All of a sudden elevates it up to, cool, he's the best part of it. And he was... a little snarky and a little fun and a little evil and a little, he really blended everything together well. And I hope they find a way to bring him back. Maybe not even as the editor, just put him in more stuff. I don't care. More Simon Pegg, please.
Yeah.
Or I would love to see Nick Frost come on.
Yeah.
He's been doing a lot more stuff lately too. Yeah. So, yeah.
But, the space station sets I thought were cool. I'm always the guy talking about sets, aren't I? I don't understand that.
Because you've got a technical eye. You notice the details. Well, that's good.
Up until you get upstairs and, everything's covered with icicles. It's like, really?
Well.
Okay.
See, I really like
for a reason, though. It wasn't without reason.
No. I felt almost like you went up that elevator. It was almost like going back in time in some regards, because the rest of the station looked this way. It looked very kind of almost Blade Runner-ish with the way the vendors and everything was crammed in there. And then you go upstairs, and it looks like 1960s NASA. I mean...
Yeah. Well...
something doesn't match here.
It gave it kind of a post-apocalyptic feel, though. That something did happen there, and technology wasn't as advanced. I mean, yeah, no, I liked that. I thought that was neat. It worked for me.
But, and I agree with you. Adam was, oh, cool, Adam. Oh, there goes Adam. It was just hello and goodbye. And you knew it was doomed to failure, despite whatever Rose might have thought.
Yeah. Well, the best is the setup of this episode, because, as you and I know, the Doctor and Rose's relationship grows or changes down the line, which let's all go from there. But I did like, it was neat how the Doctor and Rose are the first to step out of this TARDIS, and... He's kind of prompting her. It's like he's feeding her information so that she can look impressive to her new boyfriend.
Yeah, helping her out.
And so he fills her in on this stuff and then lets her take over as though she, knows what she's doing. And so when Adam comes out, of course, she's relaying all this information as though she's, not skipping a beat. She just knows all about this. And I liked that. I thought that was neat. That was a neat chemistry between the Doctor and Rose. It's like they kind of read each other. He understood, was sympathetic for the fact that she likes this boy. This is it's like Big Brother trying to help out. The sister. With the guy that he sort of approved of. He's going to keep a watchful eye. It's going to be a little bit careful, but he's helping out little sister, and I liked that aspect of it. And
the realization of when the Doctor's kind of got an idea of how this society should be, and it's slightly wrong, and then he's, like, perplexed, but, you know, she's trying to say, well, you know, you're not right. He's, well, of course I'm right. I know I'm right, you know. So I liked that. The little playful banter between her and the Doctor is a lot of fun in this one, and mm-hmm. I enjoyed that. And again, that goes to the fact that the Doctor gets a little more light moments.
It was a lot of fun to see Eccleston lighten up.
Yeah, absolutely.
In this one.
I liked the whole intrigue of what's actually going on. I just thought the reveal was just kind of...
Yeah. Eh.
The monster's not the greatest. No. I mean, the Max is...
I mean,
he's not Merc quality, but I suppose in the realm of digital creations, he very easily could be.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't even the visually. With a mouth. It was like just the reasoning.
To me,
had more issue with than how it looked.
To me, it was a reverse. It looked different, but to me, it was a reverse look of the...
of the Nestine.
The Nestine that we'd already seen. And it felt I felt a little cheated that they didn't at least try a little more. But you don't see it much. It's only in the end. It's the, you know, it's Simon Pegg just, like, steals the show. So.
Oh, well, yeah, definitely.
You really think that he's the bad guy, and really he's the servant, so or the number two. Or
whatever. That's really what I keep coming back to, is just, you know, anytime I think, hey, I wasn't really a big fan of that episode. Oh, but Simon Pegg was in it.
Yeah, and did a great job. I did like the element too of everybody's, you know, aspires to go to floor, was it 500?
Floor 500.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's the aspiration, but nobody ever comes back, you know, from floor 500. And the one gal that, you know, is going and she seems so innocent, and then you find out later that she's really kind of trying to figure out what's going on and, investigating the situation. And so that was neat, but they kind of add this little mystery, you know, thriller into it a bit. Element. So I liked that. That was kind of cool. And again, I agreed with Keith. I was a little let down on the ending, but yeah, overall it was a pretty decent movie. Show. It wasn't my favorite throughout the season, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Now let's move on.
I liked the next one more than the previous one.
So good.
This one is very good. Father's Day. The Doctor and Rose return to 1987 and the scene of her father's tragic accidents. But when she interferes in the course of events, the monstrous Reapers are unleashed upon the world, and a wedding day turns into a massacre. Even the Doctor is powerless as the human race is devoured.
Dun,
dun, dun, dun. This was really a big episode for the series, I think.
Yeah.
It established...
Set some ground rules.
Yeah, it definitely set some ground rules, which was
later destroyed.
Broken. But I mentioned this to you when I was telling you about it, Glenn, that it almost had a Langoliers feel to it.
Yeah, a little bit.
These creatures out there just eating people and everything like that.
The Langoliers is the greatest concept ever that was so poorly recognized in that miniseries.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
I agree with you, because I got the same kind of vibe, because I really liked the idea of that. And I got the same kind of vibe off of this. And they did it so much better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, they definitely did. All the time out. I had to go and check after this episode, after I watched this, to make sure this wasn't written by Stephen Moffat, because all the time elements of this were done so well.
Yeah, this was for Paul Cornell. He's another one of my favorites as far as writers on the series.
Just right off the bat, the very beginning of...
Well, you being a big time travel buff. Obviously was
going to this,
you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Doctor and Rose going and watching and her not going over there in time, and then them returning to the exact same points and seeing themselves and not making sure not to interfere. I thought that was really neat.
Yeah.
I had never seen a Doctor Who do that yet, where they return to the same point and see themselves and have to worry about. I mean, it's kind of the Back
to the
Future.
The Doctor's very hesitant to do that.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't want to.
He doesn't want to set up that paradox, which he knows will happen, and... Yeah, so I do like his cautioned approach to letting her do that again. So. Yeah,
and then mentioning that this is the last chance. You can't do this again.
Right.
And then she saves him, and
sets off a whole new paradox.
Yeah, which I found the whole thing very interesting, and I actually kind of liked the fact that the Doctor couldn't fix it.
Yeah,
that only her dad could fix
the overall,
paradox. Yeah. I mean, granted, the Doctor might have been able to if her dad hadn't have handed baby Rose to Rose, and Rose, and then they touched.
Which is funny because he tells Rose specifically,
"Yeah, don't touch do that. The baby. There's a very big scene about not touching the baby, and it will cause a paradox and let these creatures in and kill all of us."
Which runs into our Blinovich limitation effect, causes the discharge, but didn't happen there.
No, it just
although we couldn't
the
touch
time.
The TARDIS.
Yeah,
we couldn't touch the TARDIS. That would be bad. Big blow.
Yes.
Big explosion.
So overall, I really enjoyed this episode. This is one I would probably go back and rewatch quite a few times from this series.
This one had a lot of heart.
It did have a lot of heart.
It was a tearjerker. I mean, I think this was the first chance you got to explore Rose's character more. Because while the first one is Rose and is first person and is designed to really set up and introduce us not only to Rose but the Doctor, but through Rose's eyes. And so we get a lot of background on Rose as well on that one. But as we're going, we're exploring more of the Doctor's history, the Doctor's past. We're learning about the TARDIS. We're learning about the Doctor. We're learning about the Doctor's past. This was a chance to say, okay, Screech, now let's do a little bit of back history on Rose. Let's get a little more information on her. And I thought it was designed very well to do that, to kind of talk about, you know, why she lost her father, why it's just Jackie and her, you know, her setting up all of that history of Rose and how, you know, maybe the reason why Jackie's the way she is, maybe the reason why, you know, Rose is even sort of, you know, the way she is as well. So I like that. It was a wonderful way to do that.
Well, and Jackie has dropped, I can't even say hints. She's been pretty adamant throughout the series. Your father was a bum. He was good. He was this. He was that. And it was really refreshing to see Pete Tyler.
Yeah.
And go, wait a minute. You're none of these things that she made you out to be.
He's still sort of.
He is. But,
maybe in a more likable way than she portrays it.
Maybe it's because, personally, I can't say I saw. I see a lot of myself in Pete's character. Yeah. Pete's that guy who's always trying, but never quite gets there.
Yeah.
He never really succeeds at what he's doing. And Lord knows I've been there. And so I really took to him as a character right off the bat. And it was just a wonderful episode. But and then the actor, I can't think of his name right now.
I've got it here, probably. Pete.
Who plays Pete?
Who plays Pete Tyler?
Sean Dingwall.
See, he's a Sean. So
he spells it right, too. S-A-U.
Yes, same way.
Well, S-H-A-U-A. That explains it.
Wow. He's totally you.
And the last episode, Simon Plague paid a Sean.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Sean of the Dead. And he spelled it right. So
that's right.
But, just everything about that aspect of it I thought was really, really cool. Mm-hmm. I loved that. And the time travel stuff and the monsters coming in. The monsters were a little...
But you didn't see them too much.
The design of the monsters was probably lacking. Probably my least favorite part of it.
I didn't mind the design even. It was, again, kind of the not-so-great CGI animation.
Yeah, but
I don't want to bog down on that because, obviously...
There were limitations.
There are limitations
well.
Available.
And there's certain ones that you, but
and compared to the Mirka,
I didn't like the dragon design of them. I think that was my only problem. I mean, they made them more medieval and menacing, especially on this cathedral that they're in, or church
that's
that
true
they're
too.
In. That was maybe why the direction of that went because it's a certain look. But I love the concept of it. I love the fact that they're basically antibodies for the time stream to go in and fix problems once something's happened. And of course the Doctor makes the comment that if the Time Lords were still around, they would have taken care of this by now. And so without the, you know, doctors of the timeline being there, the antibodies, you know, have to fight the disease and that's what they think they're doing.
And what a powerful bit for that. I mean, to get all of the exposition on the Time War in Dalek and then to come back with this is the type of thing that would have been okay, but now isn't.
Yeah.
And this is the world we live in now.
These
are the kind of things
this kind
that of stuff.
We could have let slide and fixed. Not necessarily that it's okay to do this.
Well, right.
Well, yeah.
I mean, just that I thought was a really powerful universe moment.
What it did for me is, even though throughout the history of the Time Lords, there's always been corruption. There's always been maybe too powerful, always been, you know, power based on corruption. The Time Lords still have been set up as themselves as the keepers of time. They're the ones that overlook time, make sure, you know, things are done correctly, that paradoxes aren't set up because of things that happened in their own past. They learned from those and made themselves the keepers of time so that they made sure things went. And this is the repercussions of when you take that element out of what can happen.
Yeah.
And I liked that. And the Doctor is no longer in control because he doesn't have the power that he needs in order to fix this kind of thing. Although he's still, you know, the wheels are still working and he's figuring it out. And I liked that element. But I do, like you said earlier, Keith, how you like how it's Pete's the reason why it fixes it.
Yeah.
His realization. And it really, it's a redemption for his character. It was just so heartwarming that he made that ultimate sacrifice.
Oh, and nobody had to go and tell him to do it.
Right, absolutely.
You know, you have to die.
Now, the Doctor figured out what had to happen before Pete, and I liked that because it still
puts
exactly. It still puts the Doctor in his right place. But, yeah, the Doctor didn't tell Pete he had to do this. Pete came to that realization himself, and I liked that.
Well, and the whole dialogue at the end where talking about how he just kind of ran out in front of a car, and there was this girl who was sitting there with him until he died, so he wasn't alone. That was really...
Well, Jackie's perspective of Pete changes, and I like that, too. I like that he's no longer this deadbeat that didn't get anything done. Suddenly, he was a good guy that really, you know, meant something and was important to her and Rose. And then I liked that as well, yeah.
I think it's fun with the Time Lords that you and I, Glenn, being classic Who's fans so much... There's so many elements and episodes that deal with the Time Lords that we were really kind of taken aback in the new series when it's like, I'm the last one. Mm-hmm. And all the rest of them are dead. Because that was a huge, what? What do you mean the Time Lords are not around anymore? I mean, that was a big reveal. And then we get to this episode where we're talking about things that this is what happens. This is what the universe is like without the Time Lords. And it's just shattering. Oh my God, this is terrible. What's interesting is we go back and watch episodes like the John Pertwee one where the Time Lord shows up out of nowhere and explains things to him, and I find it very jarring to see the Time Lords now.
Yeah.
Every time we're reintroduced to the Time Lords in the classic series, they're an intrusion, they're unwelcome, they're screwing things up. Yeah. And it's just, what were you guys good for anyway?
Well, I felt the same thing when I watched The Five Doctors recently.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like you anymore, and you shouldn't. You know, it's weird that you're there, and there's in particular one reason why things are happening the way they are. And yeah, I
how
feel
strange
the same
is
way.
That
yeah,
we've
it's a whole new
on
perspective
that. It is.
On the Time Lords. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, great episode.
It was a very good episode.
Sorry, sidetracked.
No, quite all right. Well, moving along.
Then we got the duology, the two-parter of The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances. The Empty Child, London, 1941, at the height of the Blitz.
Hey, you guys sound like a newsreel.
That was an air raid siren. I'm not very good at impressions.
The army guards of a mysterious cylinder and homeless children living in bomb sites are terrorized by an unearthly child. Rose meets the dashing Jack Harkness and wonders if she has found a hero even better than the Doctor. Then in The Doctor Dances, in the second part of The Empty Child's story, the child's plague spreads throughout wartime London with its zombie army on the march. The Doctor and Rose form an alliance with Captain Jack, but find themselves trapped in the abandoned hospital. The answer lies at the bombsite. The time is running out.
Dun dun dun.
Da-da-da. These.
Excuse me.
I haven't finished series one yet, but so far these two are my favorite episodes of series one. They are just well written all the way around, well directed, well acted. Everything about these episodes were just really well done. Captain Jack, the introduction of him was a great, so far from what I've seen of him, he's a great character. I really like him so far, and I'm glad that he got in the TARDIS with them and didn't actually die at the end like they made you think he was going to. And just from his very introduction to him riding the bomb in the tractor beam, everything about...
Very Doctor Strange love-like.
Yeah, everything about him is so much fun to watch. And it took me a little bit to get used to him, though, because he has an American accent. And that's... I'm watching Doctor Who. That should be all be British accents. What's going on here? My brain doesn't quite compute that.
And John Barrowman does a very good American accent, in my opinion. That's coming from an American.
You mean he's not American? We love you, John.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Yes.
And I actually had seen part of this episode, like the very last 15 to 10 minutes of it. Because when we sat down to watch it, we watched it as a group. I was like, that gas mask thing looks really familiar. And that kid looks really familiar. And then it wasn't until... what's the main chick's name in this?
Rose?
No, the other main chick.
There was another main chick? Oh, the girl.
The homeless girl.
Not Barbara.
God.
I'll get it. I got it here in a second.
Way to put us on the spot, Keith. We just watched this.
Well, Jamie was her brother. Wow. How come we can't remember this girl's name? Hang on. Come on, Wiki. Do us some good.
Nancy. The third name on there.
Oh, it is. I was skipping down past it. Yeah.
Nancy. When Nancy gets to the site where the cylinder's at,
it's our professionalism. I enjoy. We are so on target with what we're going to talk about.
Paying attention to details.
When Nancy gets handcuffed to the table with the guy that's infected, I was like, oh, now I remember this, and I remember that part and all the zombie gas mask people walking to...
I don't care what you remembered. What do you think of the show?
I'm just saying. Those are the
There was a realization
parts.
At some yeah, point that you remembered that you'd seen the them. End of the show. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
In case some people didn't remember all the episodes. Okay. Well, Sean, what did you think?
I'm just wondering how long you... Now, go ahead.
Well, this was a big moment for Keith because... He had seen this before. This was like we get that.
Yeah,
oh, I
it
remember
was
this.
To him.
Yeah. This was yeah, familiar to him. So, yeah. Hands down, the best two episodes of the season. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we've got Stephen Moffat again to thank for that. I mean, the guy's phenomenal. The episodes are.
Is this the first thing he wrote for the
yes.
series?
Yes.
It is. Okay.
The episodes are scary.
Oh yeah, they're very creepy.
I mean, the initial introduction of the child is just unsettling.
Yeah.
But when everybody starts showing up with these gas masks, and then you realize the bone changes, and the guy goes, oh, and this gas mask pours out of his mouth. I found that to be really, above board creepy. That's like, ooh, okay. And then there's this army of these walking guys in the hotel. That was bordering on, wow, this is like intense, scary Doctor Who time now. I mean, we're there in the middle of it.
On them trying to run away from it. And with the gun and trying to... all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it almost had a classic feel to it.
It did. It really did.
It was running down corridors.
Yeah, yeah. It was
being chased by the monster.
Yeah, being chased by the monster.
I loved the whole gag with Rose showing up in the Union Jack t-shirt.
Oh.
And winding up hanging from a
barrage balloon.
Which apparently is tough to say with an English accent, because every time they said it, it... came out differently. I heard it differently.
Well, here was my thing is I only ever heard, Rose said it once too, but I heard Jack say it several times. And I said earlier that Jack has a wonderful American accent. I think he does a really good job. But there are certain words that slip out that are very British when he says them. And one was barrage balloon. I mean, we would say barrage balloon. Yeah, barrage balloon.
Yeah.
But he did. He had the more proper speak to that. And so that was one of the times that you could just kind of hear the British come out of there.
Yeah.
But which I'm fine. I'm forgiving. That was good. He's doing a fantastic job with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, back to Stephen Moffat. One of the taking something that has been around and part of this show forever.
Uh-huh.
And giving us just a little spin on it. The phone box rings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right off the bat. and our reaction is the same as Eccleston's. How can you be ringing? You're not connected to anything. And it was a shock to me because I really had to stop and think, oh, yeah, there is a phone in there. It says, police box, phone on the thing.
In the last episode, we saw inside the TARDIS without the TARDIS being in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Because he opened up the phone box and it was just a box. which I thought was really neat to see also, so...
Yeah, that was unsettling.
Yeah.
Well, in a way, that was really cool, too, because there were so many episodes of the classic series where they would open the phone box, and it was painfully obvious it was just the police box. There was nothing there, and they would go inside. And then you would get that cutscene, and they would wind up on the soundstage where the TARDIS set was. And I always found that to be very disjointed. Anytime they entered or left the ship, there was that, where is this black hole zone in between these two realities?
Absolutely. And
I retconned it in my head because it made sense. But in the new show, it was like, you open the door, and there it is. And it's like, that is so cool. And when that happened in Father's Day, it was like, whoa, that's not right. That's just weird. But the phone rings. How cool is that? And, you know, his response to that. The child? Ugh,
oh,
God.
The phone never rings. It's not even connected.
And it started a trend, because the Doctor gets phone calls now all the time. People calling from all over the galaxy.
But not outside the phone. Not outside the box.
It started a trend. He's now receiving phone calls. But just everything about this episode, great. And Captain Jack, my God.
Oh, Captain Jack.
His interaction with the Doctor was fantastic.
He is the greatest character.
Well,
you know,
I got a love-hate relationship with Captain Jack. I love him in Doctor Who. I hate him in Torchwood, but I still love that I hate him in Torchwood. So...
He's a different character in Torchwood.
Well,
though.
Yeah, he just
we
has
can't
a
get into that
persona,
yet.
Not yet, but boy,
it makes
I like
so much
it.
Sense
it
as
works.
Torchwood goes on.
It
why
works.
He is that way?
Yeah, his character works for both entities too. Yeah, yeah absolutely.
Well, just the whole interaction about the Sonic. I have a Sonic. A Sonic what? A screwdriver.
It's Sonic. A Sonic what? It's really Sonic.
Which was just hilarious. It ends up that the Sonic screwdriver actually saved them because he was able to lock the door and his gun couldn't because it ran out of batteries.
Right, right. Well, because when you use that setting too much, it drains the batteries too quick. Yeah.
And the whole, you know, it's from the factories of blah, blah, blah. Oh, there's a banana grove there now.
Yeah. Well, I was going to order a new one, but somebody blew up the factory.
Who looks at a screwdriver and thinks, this could be a little more Sonic? And Eccleston, without missing a beat, the Doctor just rattles off. What? You've never had a long night? You've never been bored? Never had a lot of cupboards to put up? And you begin to think to yourself, yeah, that's exactly how that came to be. You know, in the Hartnell years, that big computer bank that used to be in the control room that's not there anymore? He put cupboards up. It's still there. There's just a wall in front of it now.
Yeah, there's just a wall with cupboards on the other side.
We saw cupboards in the movie, didn't we?
Well,
he's got drawers.
Yeah, drawers. Cupboard drawers. Well, there's like a dresser, it looks like. There where he has set the.
Well, no, I was thinking where the master was getting the other stuff from.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It was like a giant filing cabinet.
Which I wonder, are those.
That's what he built with the Sonic screwdriver.
But the filing cabinet. And are those things in those drawers in alphabetical order? Is gold dust under G?
G. Well, footnote here.
Things to know.
I got curious about John Barrowman's accent. Come to find out, he grew up most of his life, or at least his childhood, in the United States. In, I believe, Joliet, Illinois, I saw. So,
home of the Blues Brothers?
Yeah. He was born in...
go, John!
Is it Glasgow, Scotland?
Yes.
And his father relocated here when he was 8, I believe, is what I saw. Yeah. So,
he had a lot of time work on that American accent, I suppose. Now, I've heard him in interviews, and I've heard him... And I've never thought he had a thick Scottish or... Even English accent, but he still has a kind of a British.
There's a bit of a brogue there.
Yeah, a brogue. So, So I guess I was giving him a lot of credit as a great actor, but he's just had a lot of time to study. So,
so does that mean if I go live in England for a couple of years, I'll get better?
You'll get better as an actor or with the accent?
No,
probably with
the
accent. Well, have you ever noticed, we're going to get off topic again this week, but we have time. That's not where I'd be near as long this week. But have you ever listened to Terry Gilliam, who's one of the, you know, Pythons? He actually is an American. He was born in America, went to school, went
American.
To university here. I said university.
University.
There's my British coming through.
You are such an Anglophile.
He went to college here, and that's when I think he teamed up with them. They recruited him, or he went over to the UK or something, and that's when he met up with the Python boys. Well, I remember in the late 80s, early 90s, seeing Python retrospectives and have him interviewed, and you still could tell he had an American accent, but he had a very British air to it, you know, and some things he said. So I suppose being in that situation for so long,
you start to pick up some of those, some of the language, you know, some of the inflections and things.
Now, I'd be really curious, since you brought that up, for the people who are not from the Midwest, who listen to us, what do we sound like?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
do we sound weird?
Well, I've got relatives in Jersey. Mm-hmm. You can imagine what they sound like. And the general impression of the country is if you're not in New York or L.A., you're from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. That's the only two cities that exist in the United States is New York and L.A. Nothing else
if
is
you're
in
from
between
those,
them.
Yeah.
You fly over it. That's it. And anytime anything is portrayed on television as being Midwest, and I'm putting quotation marks around this, well, they all sound like they're from down south, and it's deep southern fried, just as deep south as you can possibly get.
And that is not the Midwest.
And I look at these people and go, what is wrong with you? Do your research, because we don't sound like that. But then I thought to myself, maybe we do. And we just don't know it.
Well, maybe. We hear it every day, so we would.
Yeah. Some more feedback opportunities. What do we sound like?
Do we sound like?
I don't know. I'd be very, because I don't think we. I don't think we
have
do.
An American accent.
I don't think we have a specific region.
No.
Well,
dialect.
In Kansas.
Well, because there's
we're
the South.
So centered in the United States.
There's the South. There's the North.
Chrissy's laughing herself silly right now, going, you guys should hear yourselves. You are Southern.
Chrissy's even, she's even more what would be considered American Midwest.
Kansas.
She's in Utah.
That's West.
If you read her blog, she did
spend some time in Kansas.
We're more plains states, really.
They're American Midwest.
Is what the Utah and
she's
and
west of the Rockies,
Utah.
Though. That's
Utah. Maybe we do have a draw.
We're going to go down to Creek later. Fish for some crawdads.
Well, there's a lot of Creek around here. I've heard people call Creek in Kansas.
And Worsh.
Worsh. Going to wash the clothes. Going to wash the clothes.
We're going to Washburn. It's like, honey, there's no R.
Anyway, we are getting so far off the topic here. Let's circle
John Barrowman, on the other hand,
did a fantastic job in this. No, I agree. I agree with all the points you guys made. This is, I've said Dalek is my favorite episode of the series, and only second to it is these two episodes, but they probably rank right up together. But here's the thing, is Dalek is one of my favorites because it reintroduces the Dalek.
Yeah.
It is a fan wank episode. It's a very intense and fun episode. It's dark, but it's fun. It's action packed. It's a lot of fun. I just get this little joy when they bring the classic Doctor Who into the fold of the new series. This, on the other hand, is such a great story. It's written so well. It utilizes things that I never would have thought of. The whole Jack being a time agent. It's that turned con man who's pulls this ambulance in to make a con and a ruse to try to sell it, knowing that he has the knowledge that there's a bomb that's going to destroy it. I loved that idea. What a great concept for a con.
I'm very intrigued by the whole idea of time agents now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are no time lords anymore, but apparently there are time agents.
Yeah. Well, and did we get a little bit of that with River? We haven't yet. Yeah, I mean,
no,
she clearly.
That.
Well, they've talked about time agents because, in fact,
I don't remember.
Well, when
River.
She goes to get the band to jump from the guy, he talks about taking that off of a time agent.
Oh,
or whatever.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
that's
one,
been at least alluded
to.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. But there's more sort of the time agents, I think, coming along in Torchwood when we get there. In fact, one particular.
Yeah.
That we're introduced to, but yeah, so.
I want more.
Yeah,
absolutely. Really,
I'd like to see more in Doctor Who.
I think that's a great concept to mine a little bit. Mm-hmm. What does the time agency do?
Yeah.
I mean, are they the self-appointed now that the Time Lords are gone? Did they come about because the Time Lords are gone, or were they in existence at the same time and handled little problems, and the Time Lords went after the big stuff that were going to cause...
Separate jurisdictions there,
jurisdictions.
Are the time agents the Time Lords' little brothers? Is that what the...
Maybe.
That was exactly
I get the impression that the Time Lords are more of the monarch overseers, and the Time Agents are more of the police, you know.
Oh. Well.
So, I don't know. We're kind of expounding on something we don't know yet.
But there definitely needs to be more.
Yeah.
Just more.
Did explore the new aspects of that. I liked that this is a quasi-period piece. It happens in 1941 England. The gal that played Nancy was fantastic.
Yeah.
The idea of this genetically changed child, because that's what the nanobots thought a human would be, And then every time that this spreads, you know, that's why they become, because the human race is becoming what this one thing they think it should be, mm-hmm. because they haven't learned it yet.
It was a very Star Trek moment. You go back to the original Star Trek, the Cage episode, where Vina shows up and she's like, they had no idea how to put me back together. They'd never seen a human before. But it went way further than just that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And man, was that cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is so original because we talked about this a few weeks ago, how death is prevalent in Doctor Who. People die in Doctor Who. They have from the classic series all the way up into the new series. And there's a bit of a bleakness to it. But this was the first time that the Doctor, at the end, you know, everybody lives today. Everybody lives. I mean, it was such a moment that you couldn't revisit again.
The fact
that
he took a chance, too.
Absolutely.
And it worked out for him.
Yeah.
He didn't know it was going to work.
But you see that, you know, the compassion Rose shines because she's there with Nancy when Nancy is just so distressed over all this. You know, you come from the future. What future? And she says, Nancy, we win. You win. This isn't what it's going to be like. And, you know, so Rose has her moment, and that little gives you kind of chills moment that she's consoling this little girl who we find out isn't so little or young, but she's just, you know, how hard would it be to live through 1941 England when the Germans are bombing the heck out of your city all the time? I mean, mm-hmm. that would just be so intense. How do you deal with something like that? To have Rose be that comfort, that was neat. And then the Doctor, you know, and the Doctor and Jack's interaction in this, and Jack genuinely, his remorse for what he's done, he doesn't realize what he had done, but his remorse, and the fact that he, you know, he leaves, and you almost think, oh, he's running off, he's running away.
Mm-hmm.
And to come back and to grab the bomb and to take it off, the self-sacrifice that he's about to go through, that was fantastic. It made Jack shine as a character. And then the Doctor, his compassion to, you know, just turn it all around and everybody lives today. It was such great storytelling and great moments that it's just, I call them goosebump moments. They all were goosebump moments. And that's what makes it such a great episode. Now, you couldn't construct an episode like that again because you'd feel like you were cheating. You would feel you've borrowed now from Stephen Moffat's idea there. And so that's what's going to make this so unique, this element of the story, is because you've set the bar so high, you've got to do something different. And they have. There's more goosebump moments as we go, but that's because they got unique and original, and I like that. And so and that's what I most like about this story, is especially that last 20 minutes of film. It's so good.
The whole series has got moments to it like that, but these two episodes especially, for me, and I think I've mentioned this before, Christopher Eccleston, when he signed on initially with Russell T. Davies, he says, one season, that's it. You know,
we didn't know that at the time.
We didn't know that at the time, but he'd come back later, and he knew that he was only going to be around for, I'm not spoiling anything, there's only one Christopher Eccleston.
I know,
so that you're aware.
Keith knows.
But he told him in advance, I'm only going to do the one season. And he stuck to it. But this episode in particular, and then the subsequent ones that follow, you really begin to see, for me, Eccleston's getting into those shoes.
Oh, I totally agree.
He buys into it now. Mm-hmm. There are a couple early where he's just there. He shows up and he kind of does his thing and he's the Doctor and he's mysterious and whatnot. These episodes,
you could tell he was having fun.
He is in the moment. He is having fun. And I think later, he looks back on this stretch from these two on as maybe going, what have I done? Maybe I should have stuck around. I really begin to believe that he has a sense of remorse for saying in advance, I'm only doing the one season.
Huh.
I personally, I don't know. I've never
met Eccleston. I don't think I've seen that. But
for me, just the absolute joy that permeates his character throughout these episodes, and these two especially, I think this is where he really figured it out that this is what this show could be for him personally. Yeah.
Okay.
And it in a way it tears me up because it's like, dude, what are you doing leaving? You know? But just again, great writing and huge kudos for Stephen Moffat for giving Jack the line, you know, Rose, you're just not his type.
Yeah,
and then having the Doctor have to explain it to her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was just absolutely outstanding.
Yeah. I like the introduction of if it hadn't been Russell T. Davies that brought back Doctor Who, we probably would have never gotten a character like Captain Jack.
Yeah.
Now, Moffat may have been instrumental in creating the character. He at least created the persona of the character. I'll give him credit for that. I think Russell probably brought the idea.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
because Russell had this overarching idea for the entire season. If it hadn't been for Russell T. Davis, I don't think we'd had such a groundbreaking character as Captain Jack
Harkness. And certainly don't misunderstand my love for Stephen Moffat as anything against Russell T. Davis. Because I have the absolute utmost respect and admiration for him as a writer for being able to pull this show off.
Right. Well, and then we have to, on a threefold, you have to give credit to John Barrowman for taking that character and really making who Captain Jack was.
He inhabited this guy.
Knocks it out of the park. And knocks it out of the park. And I love the chemistry between the Doctor, Rose, and Jack. I think and it gets better from here. It gets so much better.
Oh, I can't wait.
You're going to love it. So,
just the whole scene at the very end when they're on the TARDIS and they're dancing. Yeah. That was just...
Well, there was another goosebump moment when you think that, Jack's fate is sealed. And then...
1 to 100. How dead am I?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And you're in the back of your mind, you're wondering. But you don't know. And just for... Especially the, pan around and you see the door up against the TARDIS. Well, are you coming? That was so wonderful. Yeah. Another goosebump moment. It was so...
I loved that, the way that shot was done. Just the slow pullback all the way down the ship, past the bomb, which, man, if that wasn't a big enough forefront in our mind moment. We know it's there. We don't need to see the whole thing. I mean, it's got a Star Destroyer kind of feel going over there. Just ominous, overbearing. But we keep going.
But it's what makes it so bleak, too.
Yeah,
is that long truck backwards. And, it's like we're pulling away from Jack. This is the last moment that we're going to see him.
And then we keep going.
Yeah, we're just keep going.
We're back past where the wall of the spaceship should be. And then we realize why.
Because we see the coral and we see the inside of the door of the TARDIS. That was so fantastic.
Yeah, really well done.
Yeah, it's
such good episodes.
Another one, a Dalek. I go back and I rewatch it all the time. This is another, and this is, like I said last week, this is harder to watch over and over again because you do commit an hour and a half to it. But I just, every time I see it, I fall in love with it all over again every time.
So, was Jack just so involved with talking to the computer and drinking his vermouth that
he didn't hear
the TARDIS land? Or did he have the parking brake off?
Oh, he may have been off.
Oh. He may have actually turned the parking brake off so that he could sneak up on him.
Could have been.
Well, wasn't he playing music at the same time?
He was. He had the.
I don't think that would.
Was he playing the Benny Goodman at that time, or the was it Glenn Miller?
Glenn Miller.
Yeah,
and I think he was
Glenn Miller at the time. Okay.
It doesn't matter.
No, it really doesn't. It's such a great moment. Anyway, well, so what's next? I mean,
I want to finish off series one.
I think that's what'll happen now, right? We decided there are three more episodes.
Three more episodes.
We've got Boomtown, Bad Wolf, and The Parting of the Ways.
Yeah. So those who are following along. Now, did you tell me, Sean, that the Christmas episode's on here?
The Christmas episode is not part of this season one box.
Short from Children in Need.
It's also on
here.
Season
okay,
two.
Okay, terrific. So. Okay, so we'll finish up. Chris Eccleston's time is the Doctor, so we'll finish up 9. So again, those who are following along, it'll be Boomtown, Bad Wolf, Parting the Ways. So if you're following along with us and you want to watch and join in our review, that's your homework for this week. We'll try to see if we can maybe try to get together and watch that two-part season finale together.
Oh, is it two-part?
Yeah.
You mean I can't go and just watch all three tonight?
Nope.
You could
watch them again.
That's true.
We'll watch them again together.
Or we could watch the Daleks.
Yeah, you spend 7 hours watching that.
It wasn't 7 hours.
That's going to be a
running
gag.
It gets longer every time.
If there are any fans of William Hartnell stories out there, we're getting a little miffed that we're treating this like the Mirka.
I love the Aztecs. I love the Aztecs. So there's a William Hartnell story. We'll have to visit sometime.
I loved Invasion of the Daleks. But I'm just going to pick on the length of the Daleks because of
the Aztecs
jumping over the crevice.
The Aztec. You take the. Have you seen the Aztecs?
I don't think I have. I own it, but I haven't watched it yet.
Take the Daleks Invasion of Earth, and Aztecs is like 4 times better in my opinion.
Really,
it's a good story. It really is. We're going to have to do a few.
Well, we're just going to have to.
We got to get some more and then First Doctor in.
Coming up down the road. So we're going to finish up Series 1 for next week. That's established. That's for sure. And then Keith will be ready to jump into some David Tennant. So we'll be going into Series 2, which obviously we're going to start with the Children in Need special. So if you don't have the DVDs, well, you need to buy the DVDs. But if you don't have other means of getting it, you need to find and view it on YouTube or something.
I think, it's because it was a Children in Need special.
Watch the Children in Need special if you haven't seen it, because it's outstanding.
It is. It's terrific.
And that's technically
a great little bridge
for the David Tennant era, yeah. Then the Christmas special, and we'll kind of see where right. we go from there.
We'll launch into David Tennant, though. We'll be taking a break from Tennant, so we're going to try to get as much of Series 2 in as we can before we run up against Series 6, because we will start Series 6.
We have five more episodes until the first episode of Series 6.
Five more podcasts, recording shows.
Yeah,
but we talked about the sixth episode in the
start of the series. Yeah, here's a little sneak peek for those following along.
We've got some time.
No, it's fine. We've got some time this week because we're going to come in much shorter this week than we did last week. But this will be our final thought. One of the things we had discussed, Keith, Sean, and I, is instead of an adversary archives for our next special, we're going to do a companion archive. So when we get up to a certain reintroduced companion to the series, we're going to go back and watch some of those. So that's something to look forward to as a listener.
We haven't decided which ones yet, so
we have not. Which I don't want to put that out there yet.
No, not yet.
We still got some Eccleston and Tennant
to finish up, but and maybe that could be a poll. I miss the polls.
You miss the polls. All right, we'll get the poll on it.
And is the widget working yet? Do we know?
No, it hasn't launched yet. Oh, there's a new widget on the Blogspot from BBC America. It's right now at zero, and that does not mean that the show has launched.
Which is what I thought every time I clicked on. I was like, oh, it's on now. Oh, no, it
didn't. Means that
BBC... Oh, it's on now. No, it isn't.
It means that BBC America has not activated the timer yet. So if you're visiting travelingthevortex.blogspot.com.
Are you sure?
Yes. If you go to that site and you see our timer on there, it's because it hasn't been activated by BBC, but it will soon, so...
I hope so. I want to start counting down.
Yeah, I'm ready. And then we have some big news on the horizon,
which we're still going to keep.
But we're close keeping to our chest for right now.
Yeah, we're keep an eye it's on the website, blog it's and some website information and big things on technical wise for us that are coming in the future. We're excited about.
It's a cough button, isn't it?
It is.
I'm going to spoil it.
I need one now.
Just for you.
Excuse me.
Well, see, I gave it. I didn't give it to Glenn.
You did. You gave
I
me,
did not.
You gave me your cold.
I'm glad I have a high immune system.
It was those pesky little nanogenes that gave it to you. I didn't do anything.
Actually, if the nanogenes could cure me, that would be wonderful. Don't you have some of those here in your apartment?
I'll have to look for them. I put them somewhere. I just can't find where.
Well, I think that's going to do it for us this week.
Yeah, we can't stretch
this out anymore. We've bored people long enough.
We've had enough tangents.
That's right. So, well, that's going to do it for us.
Do you want to talk Ghostbusters some more?
You brought it up. You opened the can. I got chastised by Sean for pulling. I did pull an edit last week of some things we talked about. Maybe I'll have to release it as a special short
special
trip.
Feature. Extended.
We'll call it Shortstop on the Traveling Vortex.
There you go.
That'll be the extended version.
We went off on a tangent that it was a lot of fun to talk about, and it would have been a blast to
really
listen to.
Really unnecessary.
But really unnecessary.
We got further off on a tangent than we did tonight on that week. But anyway, that's going to do it for us. I'm going to wrap this show up now because I promise we're going to come in under 120 this week.
Don't go, Glenn. Don't make us leave.
Anyway, so be sure to join us again next week. But for now, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Bye.
Be seeing you.
Yeah, I know. I just didn't say goodnight, everybody. Are you happy? Change that up for you. Good night, everybody.
And then he throws it at the end.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.